Welcome to the GWB podcast. I'm your host, Nikhil Rabindra. In this episode, I continue the conversation with my namesake, Nikhil Ravichandar. I got to fill in the blanks on some things that happened back in the day, and also got to learn something new about Nikhil after all these years. I hope you enjoyed this episode. So let's get started. Welcome back. We're here with Nikhil. So we were talking about Synchronize, and while we are all very proud of, being the A team that didn't participate in the competition, there's one exception in that which makes us even more proud. And I'm talking, Nikhil, about what happened after the final of the gaming event called Quad Damage. You know what I'm talking about. So I want you to kind of walk me through What was the confidence that you went in with?
Very low confidence, to be honest. But like, for those like listening and who weren't a part of it, but there was this one event at this IT Fest Synchronize that we were organizing, which was called Quad Damage, which was a multiplayer event for gaming. And so it was like, you know, usually at the time, video games and gaming was not seen as any kind of like event that a school might host. You know, for other kids, it was something that for teachers to say don't game. So we thought it's like a buck the trend. It's an IT event. You know, Xboxes, PlayStations, and gaming PCs are at the cutting edge of a lot of the rendering that was happening from a graphics perspective. And it did feel like it was a very good competitive sport that a lot of the people or like the kids at Cottons would love to watch. So we had this auditorium. It could seat, you know, upwards of 800 people. And so we were like, let's fill this auditorium up. Actually, I think it could seat even more than that, maybe closer to the 1,500 mark. But we were like, you know, what's the event that we're going to bring like 8-sided, 9-sided, 10-sided, 11-sided, 12-sided into this auditorium for? And it had to be gaming. And so it was really great because like we got so much interest from so many different schools. And this was like one of the few events where there were actively people within Cottons really upset that they couldn't take part in this event. So there was a real question. Similarly, like for debate, similarly for quiz, for every event, there was like this real FOMO that we were having where did we want to put, after we had a winner, sort of play an exhibition game with somebody who was best from our school side as well. And so we didn't do it for every event, but we did do it for a few events where we did add like this mystery Cottonian element to it. And one of the events that was there was the Unreal Tournament event, which was computer gaming. Now, I am a big gamer. I used to game a lot right from, I guess, 8th grade equivalent. And, I played a lot of Counter-Strike and a lot of Unreal Tournament. At some point in time, I was in a clan. You know, and I had plans. I remember when I went to university at in the UK for my undergrad, I looked up Counter-Strike teams to see whether I wanted to join them. It was something that I was like very keen on. And it was one of those stress relieving, stress busters that I used. I used gaming a lot when I was studying for my board exams. So I used to use it as like motivation when I would tell myself, if I finish studying these two chapters in physics, I can play Counter-Strike 30 minutes. These were like sort of the deals that I would make myself just to motivate me to get done with studying. And so for the Unreal Tournament event in this auditorium, I was going to be, so we did an internal heats competition amongst all of the Cottonians to sort of see who would play the Unreal Tournament event. And I think that was like a standard death match. And I won that pretty comfortably. So everybody was like, okay, Nikhil, you're gonna participate. Without really thinking about the optics of the idea that like you're gonna send the school captain up to play the winner of this event in the auditorium. And I actually didn't realize the hype. I remember watching the final match between I believe it was one of the NPS schools and another who finished in the finals and who went on to win the tournament. And I remember watching the finals match between the two of them. And me thinking, I can't believe I'm going to play one of these guys in front of all of these students. I was like, it's going to be so bad. And so after we had a winner in that game, all of the winners were told beforehand that there would be an exhibition game with someone from Cotton, that they were all very keen to play us, right? So this guy was super kicked. I remember him being pumped. He was standing on stage. I was going up. There was all of this like really nervous excitement. I can even tell you, like, in Unreal Tournament, the name of the map is called Gale, and there's only rocket launchers and lightning guns. I remember like this vividly. It's like a core foundational memory for me. Yeah, it was the best of five, one-on-one. So it's like if you kill the other person five times, whoever reaches the first of five wins, right? And if I'm not mistaken, we were tied at like four all
For really,
for
yeah.
an eternity. Like I think we were tied at four all for a long time, to the point that I remember like Sidan Mandana was doing commentate. Like he had the mic and he was commentating, and he started saying into the mic to everybody in the audience, like, "Nikhil, come on, finish this." And I think I got a lucky shot off, to be honest. Well, maybe it's reflexes, maybe it's lucky shot. I felt like it's somewhere in the middle. I definitely don't recall pressing the mouse button, but I got a headshot like across the map, to like get the fifth kill, which meant that I won. And it was just like this amazing moment. It was like it really felt like I was never good at music and never had like the music moment, but this definitely felt like to hear like a huge chunk of the school cheer for you over there was really nice. I actually felt really bad afterwards because I did wonder whether us hosting these exhibition games took a little bit away from the winners. It's their moment to shine. They shouldn't have to play somebody from Cotton. Like maybe we stole the limelight a little bit. And I did go up to this guy afterwards and kind of apologize because I was like, it was his win, it was his victory, so to speak. It was not so much, it shouldn't have maybe been our moment to take some of the limelight away. And I wonder if they've changed that in succeeding synchronizers. He challenged me. He challenged me to a one-on-one match. That same day, he refused to leave the school. He came with us to the after party. So he was hanging around actually at the back of the computer lab while we were all playing that huge LAN game. And he pulled me aside and he's like, "I want to play now a proper one-on-one with you." And he thrashed me. He really like he took me apart. To be honest, I didn't care. We're not on stage anymore. It didn't matter. It's like nobody's, this is not something that's going to be like a foundational core memory. But I did think about how, like, maybe, the way we ended that event wasn't the best way to do it if we were being really good hosts about it.
No,
Where clearly, like, yeah, it was something that he wanted to do.
not
Yeah,
at
that's how that came. But at the same time, for me, it was a great memory. Like I'll never forget it. There have been days before meetings, like when I was working in the corporate world, where I was about to take like a really big meeting, and I would have to think about like sometime I succeeded, like but it was like a pure success. I oftentimes think about that auditorium, and I think about 4-4, clutch headshot from across the map. I was like, if I can do that, I can do this meeting. It's like,
That's your bonus charm. Your happy memory.
it feels like, for sure, it was like a foundational core happy memory for me. But it could have gone so wrong, So I live a lot in the what ifs, like what if I lost that game? And even after I came off the stage, I remember Sidan pulled me aside and he was like, "Thank God you won." I don't know, as me as a as like a as an MC, I could have kept the energy of the room high. You had lost there, and I was like, yeah, thanks, no pressure. But it was a fun thing. Like, I wonder, you were in the crowd. How did it feel to you?
So that's what I was getting to. I was actually not in the crowd because, like I said, I was his team. I was actually in the PRC, the Pettigrew Resource Center, the library, sitting with the judge of my event, who was going through all his, who was doing his judging, because like my job was to get all the videos on a pen drive and play it on a laptop. I use my own laptop for the show, for the event, you know, like I think. So I was showing him that, and then like it finished. And I think during that time or whatever, we step out, people were running and telling me, "Oh, did you know like Like, first of all, the usual thing happened. Did you like Nikhil like just beat the champion? I'm like, no, I'm right here. Like, no. Like, how many times have we got to go do this again? I'm like, okay, I guess I know which Nikhil you're talking about. I'm like, which game? I mean, like, which event? He's like, oh, quad damage. I'm like, yeah, but didn't we not participate? No, that guy won. Then the folklore was that you just walked up and said, you play me now, kind of a thing. So like
Oh
that's so in
no.
16 years, that's what I thought happened. And now you're filling this up for me. I didn't even know there was like an internal game where you guys picked who plays and all that stuff.
Oh yeah, because we did the Xbox one as well. We won Xbox as well.
Oh, okay.
And I think it was either Adrian Panin, who along with somebody else from the 11th Standard batch, but we won the Call of Duty game as well. I think the main difference was that Call of Duty was a 2-on-2, and so it was much harder for people to actually follow Call of Duty in the auditorium. But a 1-on-1 is very clean, and I think the overall so it was pre-planned. It was not me just walking up saying, "I challenge you, winner of four damage." That was not
Nikhil, that was the
how that
folklore.
went down.
That's the folklore. That's the folklore I've lived with for a long time. This is like you play me, I challenge you, play me now, kind of a thing. But I mean, it's good. It's good to know all this was happening. But and then tell me, like, was the crowd like were the boys allowed to cheer and clap and everything, or was it were they just like a shh, keep quiet, they're focusing vibe?
So the teachers, I can tell you afterwards, the backlash, because obviously, like, once everybody's having like a good time, then like there are a few people, these are the few roles again, like hoisting the flag as a school captain. You're also called in for like the lashing afterwards, and there was like a big conversation afterwards saying like, is this like pro-social, like is this a good behavior that we're encouraging in our kids? Is this something that like we want, this gaming? And we had to defend a little bit of it. So the teachers were a little upset, but a part of the reason why they were upset is because the kids went wild. They were allowed to cheer. If I'm not mistaken, we switched off all the lights, and there was like this huge fight on the lights, right? So you had like a bunch of the male teachers saying that the lights can't be off. The lights must be on so we can see the students at all time, which is like this constant tension in cottons, right? Like this police state vibe on the right hand side, and on the left hand side, there's just unbridled energy of like 6,000 students, right? Like, and so I think that there were definitely like the lights kept coming on and going off, because it would be like, we would convince them to switch off the light for 15 minutes, but then the crowd would get really wild, really loud, hooting. The teachers would get freaked out. They'd go and switch the lights back on. The crowd would be like, a bit like, this is literally like early days of crowd management, I guess, where, like then for the next 15 minutes, they're a bit like more dull. So we say, hey, can we switch off the lights again? And again, the cycle repeats. Yeah, they were allowed to really have a good time. One of the things that this was a really hard one, but like Tom really put it to me, because I think it was the quiz event where we had Big Brain
Giddy.
hosting, hosting the IT quiz, and like it was an amazing quiz, and I think like things were coming along really well, but we just had nobody in the audience back then, and I think that might have been day one. And it was like this debrief that we had as an organizing team, where we were like, we have to get more kids into the events, and so what do we have to do to get the permission? And I remember for quad damage particularly, it since it fell in the second half of the day after lunch, there were a lot of people who were like totally open, like the teachers and heads of departments willing to let the kids come and be a part of it. So that's what I remember. It was like what, 16 years ago, but yeah, this is the I'm sure there was a lot more happening at the time.
You were Twitch before Twitch happened, if that makes any sense.
I don't know about Twitch. It was yeah, I guess it was live. Yeah,
Live stream,
with
play and cheer.
thankfully the yeah, it was fun. But yeah, like I said, I do have some regrets in the memory, because I do think like we took a little bit away from the winner. And we should have, but
Listen,
yeah, whatever. It's water under the bridge at this point.
I will say this out of love for those schools, but I mean, if an NPS kid, we cannot let an NPS kid feel good about being a good gamer.
Gamer, yeah,
Good for
just like
them.
on principle.
Go to IIT and be happy over there, but like leave the gaming to us. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, do well in quizzes, right? Like we won't trouble you there.
That stuff, yeah. They go, yeah. Anyway, that, I'm not going to say more on the record on that front. But yeah, so okay, so let's for at least for the sake of this conversation, we'll put a pin on synchronize and 11th and 12th for a bit. I think we can go on and on. I'll probably bring Tom in, and maybe we could even do a in the future, we could do a synchronized debrief with like multiple people in the conversation, and
That'll be fun, yeah.
we'll do that. I want to kind of go back in time now with you kind of spoke about elocution and debate and literary events. While talking to you, I had a very vague memory that came into my mind about even your writing. There's an article written by you in the Cartoonian magazine, which comes every year, about Sachin Tendulkar during his ball tampering. The title was Master Blaster Ball Tampering, No Way, or something like that.
Exactly.
So.
I remember that article actually very well. So I'm a big cricket nut, actually. So and I'm a huge Sachin fan. And at the time, I was so angry. I think it was the first time I really thought of like the sense of like racism could exist, and it exists in the sense that like it, like some powers want to take down your heroes, right? And it was just so shocking to me to think that like all of the things that you want to like put as a scandal on someone that you put this, and that was my first time of brain on that article that you so you that was a blast from the past for sure.
So you know what, like when I said the Cartoonian magazine, that's when I remembered, oh dude, you wrote this. Like I didn't I it was not part of my planning at this, but it came to my mind. I was just like, it was such a vivid memory in my head. I'm like, because that was my title, correct? Master Blaster Ball Tampering, Never or No
No, it's
Way.
exactly, never, never, or no way, no way, And it was like just 5 lines. It was 5 lines saying, why the hell would Sachin do this? Sachin would never do this. people are, this is a conspiracy. to and this is before QAnon and all. I truly believe it was a conspiracy, to take down, that's how I felt. Like this, touching on Indian cricket and cricket in general was like my foundational bonding moments with my dad. So it was very hard for me to like get a like good emotional connection with him, but I was able to get emotion from him while watching Indian cricket together. And he was a huge Sachin fan because Sachin represented all of like the promise and benefits of economic liberalization, right? Sachin's claim to fame and like his real rise started in the 90s, 91, 92, 93. And as like this little kid ready to take it to the world, like that just lined up almost one to one with Manmohan's liberalization. And then you hear a lot about the Dravids and the Gangulis and the Sehwags and the Lakshmans who grew up watching Sachin play. Like they grew up at home hearing about like the 16 or 17-year-old kid killing it. And then eventually shared a dressing room with him, and then like, all the way to like 2011, 2013. So I was a huge cricket buff, and so that was like a big thing.
All these years, Nikhil, I never thought you were cricket, because like I'm like, for what, how you explain Sachin, that's Virat to me. Like Virat is like,
Virat is a new India. So I actually there's a really nice cricket info article on this, which says that there's like an evolution of like Gavaskar, which was like a very I want to almost say like a defensive master of like the test game, but very reserved and also very insecure. Then you had Sachin that like really like young Sachin, and then much older Sachin, like was just brilliant. Then you had Sehwag, who didn't give a shit about technique. Like he was just like see ball, hit ball.
Football,
So he represented a very different, India. Then you have Dhoni, who represented what we were missing in all of these earlier players, right? Like Sachin would open the batting. So there was we never had like the solid finisher. Dhoni brought that. And then we are now talking about like 2011 India, and this India is ready to go. It's ready to take over the world. And like that, India is Virat, right? Like he with his focus on fitness, his ethical stances, like a really like controlled aggression, and like the fact that like when he plays, he's unit perfection. Yeah, I totally see that. I see also today, like, the Virat camp and the Rohit Sharma camp. So it's like, do you like the hard work, dedication, and focused aggression route, which is Virat? Or do you like lazy elegance? The idea that like somebody can just turn up, come to the pitch, see a shot ball, get on the front foot and hook it for six, which is very Rohit Sharma.
I think
And like, I think that speaks to two Indias.
yeah, no, I think it works. There's a plurality to it, which is what I love, right? I think the combination of a Virat and a Rohit is that, see, let me put it this way. The Gavaskar time was like saying, we are not going to be bullied anymore. We will stand up to ourselves. We won't punch back, but at least they don't come at us, right? Then was 91 liberalization, I mean liberalization, all I mean global, all that stuff. Definitely, you're like, it's like saying, oh, you know what? We're not only going to stand up to ourselves when the time is when we want, we will also punch back. Then the Virat age has come where it's a lot more of like I'm gonna like I demand to be on the top. I'm supposed to be number one, right? It's not like a like the mindset is like I'm here to win, right? Like I'm not here for anything else. So like and I think that's a lot of India right now. It's like why do I care about anything else in the world?
Yeah, like this is wild story of like Virat when he's 19,
No. No, this is not
or
what
something like that. Oh,
I'll tell you. I'll
whoa,
tell
tell me the story. Tell me the story.
was in the first IPL in RCB, when he was still playing. Mitchell Starc's wife now, what's her name? Alyssa Healy, right? The
Healy, yeah, looks like Healy. Yeah.
niece of Ian Healy, who was a wicket keeper back in the day.
Yep.
And Elise Perry, who helped win RCB's first title. They were in his mommy like for some training or whatever, and he walked up to them being the coffee daddy boy and said, I'm the next big thing.
Oh, it was at RCB. It was in Chinnaswamy. I thought it was in Australia.
Oh, but you got the Australians right. I mean, because like that there is a YouTube video of Alyssa Healy talking about this at that time. So in my head, I've never seen you as a cricket nut or whatever it is, but you wrote that article. Let's start from the time. So I'm just going into the theme of literary events over here, and I wanted so like you wrote a nice little sweet article there which got published, which was nice. When was the first time you realized you had some capability in being? Was it the Varun Shetty moment, or did you like always knew you know that you had something in this space that you were good at it?
Yeah, it's a really good question. So my grandma, so this is my mum's mom, my Amuma,
Yeah.
right?
I learned, by the
So
way, I learned what Amama meant because of you, because you used to say it when we used to
yeah,
sit. Like in your
so sh
in Dabba, your Amama would like give you food, right? So yeah, go on.
absolutely, exactly. Yeah, so my Amuma was like a foundational person for me here. So one of the things that she would always like sort of make me do at the dinner table when I was a lot younger was, make me do little plays for everybody seated at dinner. Or she would actually, like, during the summer holidays, for almost every dinner, she would make me, during the day, write a speech. I would spend the whole day preparing a speech
Oh,
that I
wow.
was going to give at dinner, to literally my apupa, my amuma, my sister and me, right? Like, and whoever else was maybe in the room. So it was not even like a lot of people, but she went to a very strict convent school, and she had a very that was run by the British. It was a very colonial and British education. So when she used to make me do these speeches, she used to be like very strict in my delivery. Even today, like for example, even for this podcast, I spent a lot of time thinking about, like, so I use a lot of filler words. I'm sure you have noticed, and I'm sure the audience can notice as well. I use a lot of words that essentially buy me a little bit of time to string sentences together. And this is something that's seriously frowned upon in the elocution, jam, debate circles. You're supposed to talk without adding the filler words. And it was like these little things that she would really harp on. clearly over time and joining the corporate world where these filler words are very useful, you know, awkward silences. You know, like I have allowed all of this like vocab to come back into my speech. So those were like the early moments that made me comfortable maybe doing literary events and literary activities. But I think it had to be that sixth standard. I actually, to be honest, it was not even being chosen to be the Thomas House representative for elocution in the sixth standard. It was actually, I came second in that event. And I think it was coming second in that event that was actually really important for me, because I remember this was the first time when I went up and stood in front of the mic. My legs felt like jelly. They literally started shaking. And I remember Varun Shetty came up to me afterwards, and I came second. And he's like, look, your legs, you know, he still gave me feedback. He's like, second's good. You could have come first. You know, like this is a sixth kind of kid, but like I really appreciated that guidance that he had given me. And he said, and your legs were shaking, you know, because you were nervous. And, you know, we could tell from the front row that your legs were shaking. So in the future, before you go up, always like flex your calves, both your calves, like flex it, like up to 5 reps on each leg before you go up, if you don't want, you know, to get the blood flowing in your legs so that they don't shake when you're up there. And like that little tip has been like my life. I use it today, you know, in a bunch of different situations where I feel like I'm going to be nervous standing in front of a mic talking to a lot of people. I just unconsciously flex my calf and get like sort of like pump my calf, so to speak, to get the blood flowing, which is this tip from that sixth standard. Coming second there was a huge, I remember it. It was a huge moment for me, like that made me feel like I can do this. And it did get harder and harder and harder, you know, the auditions every year. And then when I was in the, I want to say, eighth standard, I joined the Bangalore School of Speech and Drama, which is, and this is mainly because my parents saw that, okay, I'm going for all of this elocution, I'm going for debate. There's clearly like some outlet that's needed. So let's go to, and I think that drama school, I went on to do the Trinity School exam. So I did like Trinity School grade 4 speech and drama. And then I also did Trinity School grade 4 effective communication. And I think doing those two exams really, and they're pretty brutal to study for them. You have to study pieces, you get, there's a viva. You know, you have somebody who comes down from the Trinity College from London, you know, who tours India. So you get like you have to go to the British Library, you know, there's like a 30 minute slot that you have, and then you get a grade at the end of it. And I studied for these exams effectively, like to practice for a year. And I think that those gave me a lot of confidence, and also humbled me a lot, because I was grade 4, you know, you can go up to grade 8, and then there's the teacher's degree. Grade. And then I saw some people who were doing grade 7, grade 8, and teachers grade. And so, you know, for me, I think it was really helpful in the 8th standard to see the ceiling, to see like how good people can get. And also to then recognize that I'm very far away from that. And, you know, I'll even say that one of the things, you know, this drama stuff, you know, I think one of the first guests you had here was Sham. And Sham was talking about how he won the best actor prize in the 12th standard, you know, I think I think he did Julius Caesar and he was Mark Antony, and he gave an incredible performance. You know, this is like classic Thomas House fashion, you know, where it was me, Deepak Bhaskar, Rash, you know, Vanshaj was there. And we were like thinking like, we had done, I don't even know, Merchant of Venice, and we did the courtroom drama scene as like our submission. I think we came third or fourth. We didn't do great. We also, like, I think if I'm not mistaken, Rashid forgot a lot of his lines and he started going off script on Shakespeare, you know, which is not, but I have like a vivid memory of Sham performing and killing that, like, you know, really like being best actor there. And just to bring it back full circle to this podcast, hearing him talk about it right in the first episode, I was like, yes, you know, I do remember that. And, you know, like right when we were talking about how cottons are so competitive, I still remember that loss. You know, I was like, oh, maybe we shouldn't have done Merchant of Venice. I still sometimes reflect on it. You know, I was like, maybe if we had picked a different, you know, if we had picked, I don't even know what we would have picked from Shakespeare. That's not Julius Caesar. Maybe if we picked a different scene from Shakespeare and Julius Caesar, we might have done a better job than a random Merchant of Venice. But yeah, so that's kind of like how I got into the literary scene. And yeah, Cotton's had a lot of opportunities for literary stuff, particularly in the inter-school stuff activities. So that was like my main. By the time I reached the 8th standard, I realized that really what I wanted to be was I wanted to be at the inter-school events. And it was really hard at Cotton's to get picked for the inter-school events. The competition for those positions was really tough. And I would say that now when I reflect on it, I would say that like a lot of the people who used to turn up for auditions for inter-school literary events were a lot of the same people who I thought could have easily have been school captains in the 12th standard. Like it's the same cohort of people who would turn up for these auditions, and you know one or two people would be going for this from this event for the you know from the audition to the event. But and similarly, I think for the school captain, it was almost the same thing. I wonder whether you also felt that, like, you know, it almost felt like you had to be good at the literary events to be considered in the school captain role. It did feel a little bit, maybe our when we were in the 11th standard, our school captain was Anish Shetty, and he was an incredible debater and performer as well. Yeah, and so that's just another train of thought. I'm rambling at this point, but that I'm connecting that like actually there was a lot of emphasis given in the school for doing literary events well.
Now that you say it right, Nikhil, so first of all, you brought up two Shetties, although my allegiance is to another one, Abhin.
Yeah, yes, of course. Yeah.
Abhin is my Shetty. See, I think probably elocution or literary events involve the ability to form a sentence without fumbling, right? So that reflects to a good communication skill, if that makes any sense. So if you were a captain and you had to address the crowd, the audience or the assembly or whatever it is, you knew that that skill set came in naturally, right? So I
Yeah,
mean,
that's fair.
right? So you may have been the best footballer, but if you were from but if you're a boarder from, from the eastern part of the country, poor kids, I mean, I mean, if they might have been able to get school attention, school sanities, but having an eloquent flow of conversation might have been something they had to learn for the job. Point is what I'm just thinking out loud as well. But yeah, so I think literary events translates to great communication skills, or at least the ability to stand on a stage and deliver words. And I think that's part of the duties of what a captain had to do from time to time. So that I think definitely ties in together, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, it's funny you say this because I also will say that in elocution, two of the best elocution people I think I went up against, and you know I'm trying to be very diplomatic in this podcast, Nikhil. I'm trying to really hard to like
See what you
not name names,
want.
but I will say that like I remember Chirag Thomas George and Aditya Nair from Elphick House, and they were phenomenal. Like I think when it came to elocution, they were the best. And I think partly this had to do with the fact that a lot of us were very sing-song. You know, I was very sing-song in my delivery, which is very common.
Can I stop you right there? Because I was trying to explain to get sing songs as I could. So we'd always have a in the morning when we spoke like that and that, we do that kind of a sing-song thing, which even when we used to do our recitation exam or whatever, which used to be right when you had to read something, if you had those intonations, you get an A directly.
Correct.
I would thought that's the right thing. Go on, go on, go on. So yeah, so we came from that school of thought. So go on.
Well, but other than Chirag didn't have
They
as
just
much, right? Like, yeah, if anything, that like theirs was a much more authentic way of like emoting and saying the sentence. I remember in the 8th standard, both Adit and Chirag were phenomenal. And if I'm not mistaken, like I think the 8 cent elocution was like maybe the best piece I've ever done. And I was still very sing song, you know, like my piece was like Waiter from Hell. But I'm pretty sure Alec did Bean, Eggs, and Ham by Dr. Seuss. And it was so good. Like, I remember like watching it, you know, it was one of those things. Alpha Girls went first always because I think that they were first the year before. Thomas and Thomas always went last. I think it was like a function of like house order on like when you went to do your elocution piece. And I remember like watching Chirag and Adit do their work, and it was like, oh, well, what are we going to do here? And it was me and Rohan Ramnath, and you know, like I think we did a pretty good job because, but if I'm not mistaken, Adit and Chirag came 1 and 2 in that event, and I remember reflecting. I'm thinking a lot about how, like, I was so sing-song. It was actually, I don't think there was elocution from 9th standard onwards. From 9th standard, it became debate.
Great debate,
There wasn't, yeah. You know, I continued debate a long, long way into my time in the UK. And I spent a lot of time, like, in the Oxford Union and Cambridge Union debating. And I will also say that, like, the Indian style of debate is nothing like the, you know, like, the UK parliamentary style of debate. Like, I think that one of the things that, yeah, we had in our structure was just like the number of bullet points you would be able to convey in a period of time at a particular volume kind of dictated how good a debater you were. Similarly, like if you did hit a lot of the sing-song notes in elocution, the teacher seemed to like feel like this was a safe choice and then you would tend to win. But then did that mean that you were a good person in elocution? And I learned all of this when I did the Trinity School exam for speech and drama, where I had to cut out a lot of the sing song. It was very hard for me. And then also like you're humbling, right? Like you realize that like I was winning in school with all of the sing song stuff, but like in a globally recognized way that it's actually better to be a bit more authentic and to not like use the sing song as a crutch.
Makes sense. No, the sing song, even I had to break it out because like at some point you just realize that like that's the sing song is so rehearsed after a point, right? You just can't bring in your personality. You're kind of fitting into a mold of saying this is what a good sounding voice is supposed to
Oh,
be.
captain, my captain, off your full trip is done. The ship is weathered every far. You know, like it's like a, it's a song. It's a song. It's a kind of, it follows a very clear rhythmic pattern. So yeah, exactly. As you're right. It's very hard to add individuality to that and break it up.
But to your point, but see, I think that was a good clutch to a crutch, not clutch, a good crutch to kind of fall back onto at that point because of. It forces you into a cadence if you didn't have any, if that makes any sense. Right? But I think the beauty of speech is that when everybody speaks, they have their own cadence. And I think I learned that a lot more when I started watching a lot more Aaron Sorkin stuff and so on and so forth. Right. So even if you listen to a cricket commentary, you would. So Harsha Bhogle would stretch his words. Say a Tendulkar and a Dravid would hit the ball this way, but a Ravi Shastri will say, "I want to hit the ball fast." You know, like what you know. That's what makes each person who they are, right? So at that point, so like even when you hear, so for me, cricket is like the biggest form of hearing people's cadences. So I think we were all forced in a way to like say that was the only way to have cadence, but I'm happy. You kind of, again, you seek your individuality as you go through it. Like, I mean, like I do stand up once in a while and then I realize sometimes the jokes are funny, but like, I mean, see that you can make all the jokes you want in the world, but they're not here to, they could have read a joke online. They're here to see how you perform it and what you bring to it. So it is, so cadence is everything when it comes to speaking in different forms.
Yeah, I totally buy that. And I would also say that, it also speaks to a little bit of timing. And I don't think we were always encouraged to take a pause in school. There was a clock ticking.
Yeah.
So you felt like even like this, one of the events, the literary events that I hated the most was Jam, which is just a minute. And one of the reasons I hated it the most is it's so anxiety inducing. Like you hear the kids who, like, why, at what point in time did we decide that if somebody can speak without taking a breath or without, you know, like thinking effectively, but like just stringing words together that make some sort of coherent sense, that this is how you win Jam. And I remember, like, I took part at one Jam event in Sapphire's, and it was, I did really badly. I didn't do well at all. But I also remember thinking that, like, I didn't want to do well at this event. You know, I didn't, I felt like, I forget the name of the event in Sapphire's.
It was the Interact Club Fest.
Oh, okay, yeah.
11th or 12th, because I came second in Quizzing over there. Can you imagine? Yeah,
that's amazing though. Good job.
It was funny. So that was very, very funny that it happened. We can keep ranting on elocution and everything else, Nikhil, but I have more topics to discuss. So let's end this episode here, and we'll come back next week for everybody else. Thanks.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode. We will be back soon for the third installment of my conversation with my guest, Nikhil Ravichandran. Until then, goodbye.